Attention, FM DJs in the greater Portland area. Your morning show prep begins now.
Seconds after the hour of 9 in this, the month of April of the year of our Lord 2005. Thank you for coming by. We are live, I say, from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of Max 910. Talk radio for guys. It's the Rick Emerson Show. We are here on the banks of the feces-filled Willamette River in beautiful downtown Portland, Oregon. We thank you for coming by and making part of your listening day. Gary Sheffield, his role in it. They make it sound like he just happened to be in the same building or like he was driving a getaway car outside. That's kind of like my brother Dave's role in distributing methamphetamine. allegedly. All right. It's 503-535-9100. 503-535-9100 or 1-877-535-9100 if you have the misfortune to not be in the greater Portland area. If you are in some far-flung, God-abandoned locale, you can get a hold of us 1-877-535-9100 is the toll-free way to do it there. You can also email if you like with your comments, your clarifications, your kvetches, your what have you. It's rick at rickemerson.com. Rick at rickemerson.com. Today we have the continuing saga of many of our favorite news stories over the last. Monkeys continue to grow scarier by the minute. We have an update on the monkey maiming that happened at that San Francisco, it's like a primate house or something, California, in Bakersfield, a few weeks ago where the monkeys took off that guy's junk. That's and it just gets creepier by the second. So we'll have an update on that guy and his wife that were beaten down by a pack of orangutans or chimpanzees, or whatever the hell they were. We have more proof that the primate world is aligning against us. There's a new chapter in the Booby Doctor saga as of last night on Xbox Live. Fantastic update to Halo 2, by the way, from the good folks at Xbox Live and at Bungie.net. Those Xbox players in the house will know that there's been a map update for Halo 2 that they've been talking about for several weeks now. 4 new arenas, I think. All of them downloaded last night. So I was on last night, and the Xbox Live network was just creaking underneath the strain. You could just hear the sound of 5,000 assembled dorks per minute logging on. Just the sound of Clearasil tubes being popped everywhere and Xbox machines being turned on. So there's another chapter in the saga of everybody's favorite Xbox Live player, the Booby Doctor. We'll talk about that later on, another installment of the Xbox Files. And Michael Jackson and his trial continue to be more horrible.
Yes.
And disturbing. And you know what I'm talking about.
If only
about,
there was TV coverage. If only there was TV coverage.
And it's supposed to happen today, right? The story that we're going to cover?
Yeah.
The Michael Jackson trial, those folks have really developed a monopoly. They have cornered the market on a very specific type of news story. And it's that news story doesn't have anything actually profane, or as the FCC would say, indecent. There's nothing clinically perverse about the story. In no way is it actually physically obscene. It's just wrong.
It's only your own act of imagination that makes it so dirty.
It's just wrong, and it gives you what Annie Wilkes would call the oogie feeling. The creepy brown sensation that all things are not right in this world. So, I don't know, in probably 6, 7, 8, 9 minutes, we're going to have what I believe to be the worst Michael Jackson news that you are ever, ever, ever going to hear. More disturbing than his hand inside Macaulay Culkin's shirt. More unnerving than the thought of him licking a small child's head while he sleeps. Creepier than video arcade walls covered with monkey poo. It's really just off the charts. It's unbelievably, inconceivably, unfathomably disturbing. what we're going to talk about today. Michael Jackson. We're looking forward to it. Jen Lane's going to be here from Barfly Magazine. We'll talk about the best places in Portland for cheap, sleazy, non-committal sexual hookups. Because that's what we do. Jolie's going to be here from Corporate Accounts Payable with How Chicks Think. And we'll talk more about that later on. We've got kind of an interesting question for the Jolie segment today. We'll get to that later on today. We have today's top five. Top five songs I'd like to make R.E.M.'s Michael Stipe sing at gunpoint. That's coming up, as well as your phone calls. Later on today, Donna Mike, like us at 3, world-famous Phil Hendry show at 7. We're joined today, as are we always, by Kyle, who's going to be... Now, you have the race again tomorrow, right?
I got a race tonight.
That'll be fun. And then tomorrow, you got the IMUS thing.
Yeah, I got to do IMUS tomorrow, and this show, my other job, and the Mariner game tomorrow night. So.
Is this like horse racing?
No, it's motocross.
No, they have animatronic... They have animatronic figures to do that now. Did you see that thing? Is it in Qatar or Saudi Arabia or someplace? There was a whole headline, in the London Register this morning about camel jockeys. And it was for you. And then you do a double take on it, and then you realize they're actually talking about actual. I know this makes me an ugly American, but I didn't know there actually were such things as camel jockeys. I thought that was just a thing that came out of my dad's head after too many Löwenbräus. I didn't know that was actually a thing that existed. But I guess it shouldn't surprise me. I guess in Qatar, the racing of camels by underfed children is, I guess it's like the state pastime or whatever there. But there's been some complaints lately about the people who are watchdogs in such activities. So they've got, I swear to God, this is true. They've got small robotic jockeys that are going to be riding camels now instead of children. We'll not be talking any more about it later, because there's really only so many times we can use the phrase camel jockeys during a radio broadcast without feeling altogether awkward about things. In any event, so you got to get up at like 4 in the morning tomorrow, and you got to do this dumb show, and then you got to go do your other job.
Yeah.
And then you got to go race and hope you don't fracture your spine in 15 places, which is like this, which would be the second time you've done it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You broke your spine or your back or your neck?
Back and neck. Did a nice number on those.
See, I don't understand how it is. And how old were you when you broke your neck the last time?
Senior in high school.
Because this is, now for people who don't understand, this is what is the name for motocross?
Motocross, yeah.
And so you can't, as I was to understand that if you broke your neck, you ended up taking all your meals through a straw for the rest of your life.
No, I just cracked.
He just cracked. It's only sort of broken.
I think the doctor's words, your spine looks suspicious. That's what they told me.
That's like when you're in the dental chair and the guy's got you leaning back and you've got the paper apron around your neck and there's the big light and you can smell all the hydrogen peroxide coming off his assistant and he's looking into your mouth and he's scraping at your teeth with a pick and he's got a camera out and he says,
oh, I see a suspicious shadow on E5. And there appears to be some occlusion on 15C as well.
And you have no idea what he's talking about. It doesn't make any sense. He's speaking in some sort of proprietary dental gibberish code that you couldn't possibly understand. And your neck isn't... It seems to me like your neck isn't one of those things where every time you break it, it becomes stronger. Some of those...
I think it's like the three-strike method. So I got two more to go.
Some of those bones knit together and they have more tensile strength than before, but I would imagine that your spine is not one of those sections of your body. Tim Riley's working on the following stories in the Max 910 newsroom.
Well, we're going to talk to a wacky southern politician. And more Michael Jackson bizarre news. We'll tease you with a couple of things here. A guard says the kid wasn't allowed to leave Neverland Ranch. And a teenager who defended his friendship with Michael Jackson on national TV has been charged with having sex with an underage boy.
And believe it or not, that's not even the disturbing news I was talking about earlier.
No, that's just the tease.
Oh, and Macaulay Culkin and his succulent beestung lips will be featured prominently in today's Jackson Watch as well. You want to be listening for that. That's all coming up. I don't really have time to get into this thing that I hold in my hand in proper depth. I'm just going to say this. We had a listener party 8, which happened last Friday. And on Monday, we were doing the recap of it. And we were talking about there was a portion of the evening after the live broadcast, but before everybody cleared out, which would have made it around 11:15, where there was apparently and purportedly a couple, a man and a woman, doing what Dr. James Dobson would call a very special hug. In an upstairs alcove, there's apparently some couple having sexual relations of some kind in an upstairs alcove after the party, which I did not see. I was only told about this by somebody else. Rob from the House of Rick came down and told me what was going on, and I had to make the snap decision there about whether to go upstairs and leer like a voyeuristic old man or whether to stay downstairs and mind my P's and Q's. I decided to keep myself to myself because you don't want to be seen clambering up the stairs like some sort of deranged gibbon to go stare at a couple humping it up by the ice machine. So I just passed on that. But we did mention on Monday on this program during the recap that there was some couple that was having sex upstairs at the listener party. And that I knew who they were, but we did not want to identify them for reasons of decorum. Because I don't want to bust on anybody's life. You never know who's single and who's engaged, and you don't want to cause any sort of a matrimonial strife with anybody. Who knows? And so I said on Monday, I'm like, well, there's this couple that was getting it on at the listener party, but I don't want to mention who they were. So here's what I got in the mail yesterday. I opened the mail, and I've got a letter from a couple purporting to be the closet humpers, and then there's a picture of them. Except for here's the thing. I know who it was that was having sex purportedly on Friday night, and it was not these people. Well, that's not technically correct. It was not exclusively these people. So now we're faced with the very real possibility that the same space upstairs at the Viper Room on Friday may have been used within the space of about 20 minutes by at least two different couples. Just some sort of WrestleMania-esque tag team action going on upstairs. Kind of like a Morning Sam, Morning Ralph kind of a thing. Like the swing shift clocks out just in time for the graveyard shift to clock on. You know what I mean?
That was a very small place, too.
Seriously. And so I've got a picture of the couple. I know, we'll talk, and they have a long letter that we'll read. So we'll get to that later on. Your phone calls, your emails, and all of that is 503-535-9100. Live from Portland, it's the Rick Emerson Show. We begin, as we always do, with Trey Parker and Matt Stone. It's the Man Song, live from Portland, the Rick Emerson Show, right here on Max 910. Don't go anywhere. Hey!
What makes a man? Is it the power in his hands? Is it his quest for glory? Give it all you got to fight to the top so we can know your story. Now you're a man. A man, man, man. Now you're a man. A man, man, man. A man, man, man. You are now a man. You're a man. Now you're a man.
All right. Tim Riley begins everything around the corner as he always does. It's the Rick Emerson Show live from Portland on Max 910. Don't go anywhere.
Live it. Live it.
Everything else is crap, and it's not even local crap. Rick Emerson is live and local. Weekdays from 9 till noon, Max 910. Talk radio for guys.
Oh, and the McCartney raping has already begun. I'm looking at this Tickco.com. This is a ticket company. Now, granted, these are not box office seats.
Mm-hmm.
These are seats for people who were too lazy or busy sleeping it off before to get the McCartney tickets from the box office. This is for his show at the Garden at Boston, Massachusetts. Floor, row 7, not even front row. Row 7, guess how much McCartney tickets are going for 7th row?
$150.
$950.
They're out of there.
Bada bing.
They are out of their mind.
$950. Good God almighty. And then you get way back in section 309, they're $315. So there you go.
Oh, that's better.
Have fun with that.
And people were complaining about Madonna prices last year.
$94. Highway robbery. All right. Well, Alan, U2's coming, and the tickets for U2 are like $175, I think, at the toppermost there. Because Bono's a man of the people and all.
Yes.
All right. Here's Tim Riley. Yeah, that's what I tell you.
You feel sorry for the starving people in the nosebleed seats.
Seriously.
Okay, I got some breaking news here. complications for the simple life, Paris Hilton says she and Nicole Richie are on the outs. She's released a statement saying, quote, it's no big secret that the two are no longer friends. But the hotel heiress refuses to reveal the cause of the spat. She'll only say, Nicole knows what she did. Last week, the 24-year-old told USA Today and another friend, another friend will replace Richie on the next installment of the reality show. Fox denied planning or a casting change for season 4. A network statement says producers are reviewing the show's creative direction.
Okay. I know. Well, the story that I heard and how shameful that I've even followed these things. Kyle, have you heard the same story I have?
I heard a story on Don and Mike yesterday.
And I didn't hear Don and Mike yesterday, but the story that I heard from, I remember you even told it to me, I think it was in the New York Post, was that they were at a party together, and there was supposed to be like a movie, or that was the Simple Life season premiere or something, or the season finale, and instead Nicole Richie put in the sex tape. It's like they're going to watch the Simple Life, and instead there's the, you know, the raccoon-eyed green screen of Paris Hilton getting it put to her by what's his name, by Nitwit Rick Solomon. So there you go.
She needs to have more of a sense of humor about himself.
He just needs to be zen with her status as a slatternly hoe. Here's Tim Riley.
Then charges have been dropped against the suspected accomplice of the man accused of shooting rock singer Ray Davies in the leg. Prosecutors in New Orleans say the suspect was released early today after Davies told them he was unable to testify until later this year. They said the longtime lead singer of the Kinks is on tour. The mother is in custody of two infants who were found wandering naked through a Beaverton neighbor's driveway. Washington County Sheriff's deputies were called to the 200 block of Southwest 203rd Avenue in Beaverton yesterday by a woman who found the boys. Later, 26-year-old Melanie Souther walked up to the woman's home and identified herself as the boy's mother. Deputies searched Souther's home and found that, they said they found filthy living conditions, drug paraphernalia, crystal substance, which tested positive for methamphetamine. This is in Beaverton. The drugs and the paraphernalia were easily accessible to the boys. She's charged with child neglect, endangering a minor, and drug possession charges. This neighbor tells Fox 12 News those kids could have drowned in a nearby creek.
There's a creek right down here, right behind the house. Anything could have happened. Anybody could have picked them up. It was a horrifying thing to see.
Meanwhile, W says high gas prices are the fault of politicians who won't pass his energy bill.
The summer travel season is fast approaching. Gas prices are on the minds of millions of Americans. Members of Congress can send an important signal that they are serious about solving America's energy problems by getting a bill to my desk before the summer recess.
At the same time, the Wall Street Journal reports record earnings for the oil companies, with Exxon leading the pack.
Earning a profit of $8.4 billion for the fourth quarter, which was effectively the largest quarterly profit, not just of any oil company, but of any publicly traded U.S. company ever. To put that in perspective, that was about $3.8 million in profit per hour for Exxon in the fourth quarter.
That's the Wall Street Journal.
All right, well, as long as they're being taken care of, that's what matters, that we can sleep at night knowing that the oil... We took over the country where the goddamn oil comes from in the first place. What else could we possibly do other than put a refinery on my own property? I don't understand what further steps we could take to drop the price of the friggin' gasoline. I mean, I'm glad that the Iraqis are able to buy into like 3.5 cents a gallon or something over there.
Yeah.
If you're buying gas, I mean, if you're an Iraqi citizen, it's literally like 7 cents a gallon.
You'll die with a full tank.
I know there's... I mean, I know that your family's diet consists of mosquitoes and whatever you're able to scrape off the bottom of, scrape off the bottom of a shoe. But, you know, you will be able to drive to that meal.
Well, up to South Carolina we go, where House leaders vowed to pass a bill strengthening the state's criminal domestic violence laws by the end of the session. The pledge comes a day after it was reported that a House panel killed one bill increasing penalties for domestic violence while passing another making cockfighting a felony. It follows what critics called insulting comments about domestic violence from the chairman of the committee, who is his Representative John Graham Alton. He told why battered women return to their abusers. The women ought not to be around the men. I mean, you women want it one way and not another.
Woman ought not to be around a man. I mean, you women want it one way and not another. Women want to punish the men, and I do not understand why women continue to go back around men who abuse them.
That's a fantastic accent. Way to go.
He blames the criticism on them Yankee liberals.
But we've looked and looked. This bill doesn't close any loophole we got. We don't have loopholes in our criminal statutes. They're pretty severe. This is just driven by some interest groups who like to cause trouble and carry that liberal standard down the line. No one ever points out where we have a loophole in our domestic violence laws or in our assault and battery laws. We've got the tightest laws in the country, I believe.
Foghorn Leghorn. Where is he from?
South Carolina.
Well, that explains everything you need to know right there.
The representative says, stop picking on South Carolina.
You folks got to do your homework a little better. You can, South Carolina, for misdemeanors, you can serve 10, 15, 20 years in jail. Sometimes, upon conviction of a felon, you get probation. I mean, y'all just off on the wrong hunt. I hate to do this, but you got to do that background work.
Thank you, Cooter. Have you noticed his nose seems to be springing some sort of a leak?
Yeah.
Not that cut that we just played, but the... Play the cut right before that one. The cut that we just played previous to that one. Number nine, whatever it was. It must be from the queue.
We looked and looked. This bill doesn't close any loophole we got. We don't have loopholes in our criminal statutes. They're pretty severe. This is just driven by some interest groups who like to cause trouble and carry that liberal standard down the line. No one ever points out where we have a loophole in our domestic violence laws or in our assault and battery laws. We've got the tightest laws in the country, I believe.
All right. Now, there was some other cut where sounded like his nose was leaking somehow. That's a weird sounding guy right there.
Back to cut 11 now. He says it is the liberal media's fault.
Because they're misled, and a lot of times they're being misled by people like you.
Well, you know what? I still think, and based on this interview, I think people that watch it are still going to be asking various questions about why it is one way for cockfighting and why it's another way for domestic violence, and that's something that you're going to have to explain to them.
I just explained the difference between having accessories to felonies and not misdemeanors. Did that...
Absolutely, but I don't live in your state, sir.
I can't understand what the hell you're saying, sir.
They're the ones asking the
question. We have.
We've
got an organized resistance here, and that's all right. Everybody's got a right to...
Well, you know what? We appreciate you coming on today. State Representative John
Tell
Alden,
Amy hello now.
Much.
We miss her. Bye.
And we'll be right back.
War of Northern Aggression. I have no idea what he was talking about.
No.
I don't understand. Look, perhaps I'm not as up to speed on the great glories of Southern culture as some, but I'm unclear about how cockfighting and domestic violence got into the same conversation in the first place. Is there some correlation there that I'm missing? Is there some...
There were two bills that they were passing at the same time.
Okay.
And those are the two most important things on the agenda in South Carolina, cockfighting and domestic violence.
I see. And cockfighting seemed to take the higher priority there.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, okay, there you go. So there's Representative John Graham. John Graham Allman, there you go. All right, here's Tim Riley in the Max 910 newsroom.
You're probably wondering, is the new pope a friend of the Jews? Yes, declares the rabbi Israel Singer, and he should know.
Yes. Unequivocally, I've had a personal relationship with Pope Benedict XVI. I know him for over 20 years.
Really?
Yeah.
So your longtime companion? Let's hear that guy again, this longtime friend of the Pope.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Unequivocally, I've had a personal relationship with the Pope.
Yes,
Pope Benedict XVI. I know him for over 20 years.
Okay. We picked out floor mats together and whatnot. All right, well, there you go. I'm just waiting for somebody to turn up a photograph of the guy dressed in the
Vatican smoke store. He chose black, chose white.
We purchased dried palm fronds together. I'm just waiting for the first photograph to come out of that guy dressed in the Hitler Youth uniform. You know what I mean? Because I'm just saying, you go from one tightly organized regime of men with peculiar fashion sense to another. So, you say tomato, I say Nazi.
Time for the Jackson Watch.
Is your Jackson Watch Thursday?
Start today.
Today's Jackson Watch, I mean, it really is a copious bounty.
I think we'll start off moderately and
We'll build to a
crescendo.
In fact, let me see the crescendo piece there for just a second while you're reading the rest. The next Jackson Watch comes in, I believe, at least three different sections.
Three for Thursday.
Yeah, each more disturbing than the last.
Here we go. NBC's Jennifer London reports one of the teenagers who defended Jackson on TV has been arrested for having sex with an underage boy.
Jersey teenager, who has been one of Jackson's most vocal supporters, has been arrested and charged with having sex with a minor. In November 2003, he spoke on the Today Show.
He never did anything to physically or mentally harm me. He never gave me drugs. He never did none of that stuff. It's all lies.
I've known Pope Benedict for many years.
Yeah. All right. We had a personal relationship.
Yeah. All of those kids are such... I mean, I know that when you're a teenager, you're still half-formed and your personality's still being solidified and whatnot, but those kids are all just serious whack jobs. I mean, just all the kids that I've seen, even that kid that was a 24-year-old youth minister, he's obviously half crazy in some bizarre way. They're all just like little chips off of this mom who is testifying, who's clearly just as mad as a hatter. I mean, there's no... That's the thing about this Jackson case, is there really is no good guy, there's no hero, there's no white hat, there is no one remotely normal in this case. Everybody up to and including Tom Snedden, who's the prosecutor, they're all crazy. I mean, it's just an entire pack of lunatics.
And the Family Channel commemorates the trial by presenting Home Alone 2 tonight, Lost in New York, starring Macaulay Culkin.
Well done.
Speaking of that, Macaulay Culkin plans to testify on behalf of Michael Jackson in the singer's trial and child molestation. But Culkin's publicist, Michelle Bega, said last month the actor has no plans to testify, would not confirm any change in her position. There's no change at the moment, said she. The testimony could rebut claims by former Jackson employees who say they saw the pop star inappropriately touch Culkin in the early 1900s when he was a frequent visitor to the Neverland Ranch. In a testimony Wednesday, a former guard to the ranch and the security staff was ordered not to allow the singer's teenage accuser to leave the ranch in early 2003. The note was posted on the guardroom message board around the time prosecutors alleged Jackson's associates held the teenager and his family against their will. We weren't allowed to have him off the property without some sort of permission from the supervisor, said Brad Barron, a Guadalupe police officer who moonlighted as a guard for Neverland for 5 years. Barron described Jackson as a hands-on manager.
Wait, hold on. Thank you. Okay.
Saying the staff would be on pins and needles when he was at the ranch, and there was much more work to be done.
And I'm going to skip the obligatory morning show joke, but all right. It sounds like Macaulay Culkin's been rebutted enough already. Ha-ha. All right, there you go. Now, yeah. When I said early on that the Michael Jackson case... that I was in three parts, each more horrifying and unnerving than the last.
Would this be the PG-13 portion of the program?
Well, you know, that's the really creepy thing about the Michael Jackson case, is that none of this is really perverse or offensive in any traditional sense. You know, like we all know that there's something deeply wrong about Michael Jackson coming in while a child is sleeping and licking the side of his face. But having his hand inside Macaulay Culkin's shirt or whatever while hoisting him up from behind to play Asteroids. But you're really hard-pressed to identify why any of these things are really wrong, strictly. Not even wrong. You can't even really explain why they're so goddamn unnerving. They just are. And so people who have perhaps already perused various news sources this morning already know what I'm talking about, and you already know that this is true.
I want to hear it again.
This piece of Michael, this new Michael Jackson story that has come out, that's on the net this morning. The photograph that accompanies this, and I have to stress that, as Dave Barry says, I am not making this up. The photograph that accompanies this Michael Jackson story is just a huge jar of Vaseline. The story reads thusly. For the grand finale of the state's case against Michael Jackson, prosecutor Tom Snedden hopes to present a shocking story of Vaseline and alleged sex abuse. The Drudge Report has learned. In a bombshell motion filed in closed court, which horrifies all of us, but which I'm strangely unable to turn away from, Snedden has obtained testimony from a former Neverland security guard who claims he fetched a large jar of Vaseline for a visibly aroused King of Pop. Page 2. In 1993, quote, Jackson called the guard and asked him to go to Jackson's car and get a jar of Vaseline from the center console of the vehicle.
Why was it kept there?
God only knows. Wasn't even new. Wasn't even a brand new jar with the seal still on it. It's all used and whatnot.
There are plenty of traffic jams in L.A.
The AM PM's just a little too far down the road. Is that Ralph still open? No? I got some in the glove box. Go get it. To fetch a jar of Vaseline from the center console of the vehicle and bring it to Jackson's bedroom. Shaquan and Abdul opened the unlocked door of the black SUV, retrieved the Vaseline. Imagine trying to impress somebody with the fact that you work at Neverland Ranch, and they want to know if your job is to feed Bubbles the chimp. Is your job to, whatever. You help coordinate Michael Jackson's wardrobe. Perhaps you're running the recording studio. No, I fetch Vaseline for him in the middle of the night from his car. I get large, previously opened, undoubtedly used bottles of Vaseline, and I bring them to Michael Jackson's bedroom. They unlocked the door of the black SUV, retrieved the Vaseline, and headed for Jackson's bedroom. Is there any more disturbing sentence or phrase in the English language than they retrieved the Vaseline and headed for Michael Jackson's bedroom? That really sums everything up here. That really says everything that needs to be said about the general nature and tone of this case. But improbably it gets worse.
Was he able to open the jar?
When Jackson opened the door to his bedroom, Jackson appeared sweaty.
Jesus. Maybe the air conditioner was on the fritz.
And I just keep getting these mental images of Burt Reynolds in striptease where he's all just all head to toe. Jesus. Like they're waterproofing some sort of a pistol. He appeared sweaty, wearing only pajama bottoms. Abdul said that Jackson appeared to be visibly aroused. Oh, and did I mention there was a young boy in the bedroom with Mr. Jackson? Chandler was observed arriving with Jackson in the SUV. Chandler was in Jackson's bedroom when Abdul was... This is Jordy Chandler. This is the kid who became the youth minister, I believe. Jordy Chandler is in Jackson's bedroom when Abdul was requested to obtain the Vaseline and bring it to Jackson. Good goddamn almighty. There's your Jackson watch. We'll be back after this. Yeah. The guy who sent me the photograph of Joseph Ratzinger, now Pope Benedict the 16th, he looks like that kid from The Omen. It's a picture of, he's not actually in his Hitler Youth uniform, but this is, he's here and he's like in a German military, like an anti-aircraft uniform. Yeah, he just looks all menacing and evil and whatnot. Wait, what are you going to do? All right, in case you've just joined us, the phrase of the day is, he retrieved the Vaseline and headed for Michael Jackson's bedroom. I'm going to read that once an hour for the duration of the week. For the rest of this week, you're going to hear that every hour in the Rick Emerson program. All right, just as a benchmark, just as a bellwether, just as some sort of a high watermark for exactly how bizarre the news can get in this faded republic of ours. 503-535-9100 or 1-877-535-9100. Here's what's coming up. Jen Lane from Barfly Magazine is going to be here. We have a penis watch coming up here in just a moment. We've got the top five songs I'd like to force R.E.M.'s Michael Stipe to sing at gunpoint. And we'll do Jolie from Corporate Accounts Payable and more news on the Xbox front. Next hour, including a booby doctor update. Here's Tim Riley.
Time for a penis watch.
Here's your penis watch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson Show.
Take a look at my enormous penis. And my troubles start a melting away. I take a look at my enormous penis. And everything is going my way.
Dateline Hong Kong. Chinese men have no reason to feel inferior about the sizes of their penises, according to a Hong Kong study that showed local men measured up to others elsewhere in the world below the belt. Our conclusion is that Hong Kong people are no smaller than Western men where their penises are concerned. This sounds like an urban legend. This is from Chen Lung Wei, the director of urology at Union Hospital. There has always been this myth that Westerners have bigger penises and their sexual ability is better. A group of scientists in Hong Kong spent 5 months from October last year measuring 148 ethnic Chinese penises.
This has got to be the most awkward job on earth.
Mm-hmm. These guys who are between the ages of 23 and 93. The average length was 3.4 inches, which compared favorably with similar studies on other men overseas.
I got Kyle's visibly having to restrain.
3.4.
Visibly having to restrain himself. Mm-hmm. Moving on. No, this is now we're broadcast. This is a journalistic endeavor. We're broadcasting this.
Yes,
the public interest.
Politically speaking,
public about interest, average. Convenience, and necessity.
Germans have average lengths of 8.6 centimeters. I don't know.
I don't understand them. I'm an American. I don't know.
Israel
metric.
8.3, Turks 7.8, and Filipino 7.35. Your average American is 8.8, which is bigger than Germans.
Ooh, Brooklyn.
America's number one.
That's some Yankee pride right there. So to speak. There's your penis watch.
Take a look at my enormous penis. And my troubles start a-melting away.
Take a look at my enormous American penis.
Take a look at my enormous penis. And everything is going
in your face, everybody who's not us.
Take that, Taliban.
All right. Fantastic. Rick. We've got a monkey watch coming up. Rick, about monkeys and chimps. Listen to this. Rick, a chimp is an ape. A chimp is not a monkey. Stop, please stop, saying and implying that a chimp is some kind of monkey. If the story is about a monkey, it's not about a chimp. I don't understand what this means. If a story is about a chimp, it's not about a monkey. You sound like a fool when you get it wrong. Dude, like anybody anywhere knows. Like anybody on God's green earth, except for you, understands the difference. F you with a big, fat, hairy ape who will then remove your junk with his bare hands. It's this sort of love and respect for the audience that makes the Rick Emerson Show such a hit with the male 25 to 54 demographic here in the metro area of Portland. All right. Dude, nobody understands. Nobody. Look, I'm more than willing to say that I don't understand the difference between a monkey and a chimp and a baboon and a... I guess a primate. They're all primates, I would imagine.
We need
right?
Someone like Joan Embry to come in here and explain it and bring some in.
Well, you know, or just those bastards from OMSI weren't such weasels about the whole thing.
Now, there are no animals over there. We need somebody from the zoo.
Yeah, do we know anybody at the zoo?
I don't think so. They're pretty quiet over there.
Not the radio kind.
No.
All right. So if anybody out there is able to explain in finite, easily understandable terms, as though you were talking to a small, slightly retarded child, exactly the difference between a monkey and an ape and a chimp and a primate and a gorilla. If you could just some sort of a diagram,
yes.
Maybe if you have to use finger puppets of some kind, doesn't matter. I don't understand.
Oh, like an evolution type of chart?
Maybe. You just show me some sort of a tree to help me understand how these things work, because there apparently is some sort of rash of inexplicably violent and vastly entertaining monkey activity, primate activity in the news. So it clearly is not a thing that's going to be going away anytime soon. It's a thing we're going to be talking about with some degree of regularity. So if you're able to make this clearer for us, I would appreciate it just for the purposes of journalistic accuracy. I'll see, and here come the phone calls. All right. Is that, are these monkey calls, Kyle? Or, primate call, whatever? All right. Full-time listener. Ethan in Beaverton. Ethan, how can I help you today? What's up?
Hey, dude, for the easiest explanation, and it's not completely true, but monkey's got a tail, ape doesn't.
So if it has a tail, but I thought then everything, I thought we, like, we have tails, right? They're just sort of the
well,
sort of vestigial.
Well, tail bone does not really count.
A chimpanzee doesn't have a tail.
So if it has a long, visible tail, it is a monkey?
More or less, yes.
And I think they're harmless.
Like an ape, you know, like a gorilla is considered an ape. A chimp doesn't have a tail, and orangutan, all that kind of stuff, you know.
But then you
so
get
we
like
are considered apes by that.
All right, so you, but then you get like a spider monkey or a
right,
you know, or like one of those like a pigtail monkey or something. Those are monkeys.
Yeah,
correct.
And we all prefer the kind that swing around happily.
which is the kind that's in Zany Adventures with Clint Eastwood?
Now, that I couldn't tell you. I haven't seen that one.
In Every Which Way But Loose? I believe that's an orangutan, so that is not a monkey, but it is an ape.
Right.
And they're all primates.
Yes.
Okay.
All monkeys, apes, whatever, they're all primates. All
right. Yeah. It's like the difference between say someone from Oklahoma or Massachusetts. They're somewhat related, but not really.
See, do you see how easy that was? And you didn't have to get all snotty about it, like this guy that emailed me talking about monkeys taking my junk off? All right.
I mean, I suppose there's a better scientific explanation, but, you know.
Well, I got a really tiny brain. I got a brain the size of a kidney bean, my friend. So I appreciate it. All right, I'd like to leave you with this thought. He retrieved the Vaseline and headed for Michael Jackson's bedroom.
That's wonderful.
All right, there you go. Thank you. All right, full-time listener, our good friend Nate joining us now. How are you, sir?
Hey, how you doing, man?
What's up with you?
Okay, anything about between an ape and a monkey is totally semantics. The only way you can really tell between the two is ape will not kill ape.
Okay, you just been waiting all morning to say that.
I really have, yeah.
All right,
there'll
be no
ape-on-ape action.
All right, I'll be... I'll do the implied F-mat with Dr. Zayas.
This is brought to you by Barfly Magazine.
All right, there you go. Here's, that was like when you hear, that was like when some buddy of yours tells you like a 4-minute joke just because he wants to get some really bad pun at the end. He just, is that the cat that chewed your new shoes? Ha ha! And then he slaps you on the back and he passes out in his peanuts. Here's Tim Riley.
Note to Kyle, let's go back to news clip 14 with my apologies. You'll know why in just a moment. Tonight on the TV, we have Predator, a 1987 film which stars Arnold Schwarzenegger. A sneaky alien mobster attacks jungle commandos. Arnold Schwarzenegger has come under fire after saying the California border should be closed.
It's a federal issue, and the only thing that I can say and add to this is really close the borders. Close the borders in California.
Aren't the borders in California? I mean, they're technically, they're theoretically closed in California.
Not really, just drive through like a toll booth.
They're not actually closed. I mean, I guess they're closed if you don't have $15 to pay a coyote to smuggle you through in some, you know, in a crate full of walnuts or whatever.
I mean, you're making California stop and you keep going.
Yeah, I mean, you know what California's borders like? California is like the perforations between sheets of tissue on a bathroom toilet paper roll, you know what I mean?
Just, single ply?
Yeah, just so unbelievably porous. The best part, and people, you'll see this image online occasionally, like on an internet news site attached to some sort of a story. And people always think that it's a gag or it's fake. But, Tim, you lived in SoCal. You know what I mean? You've seen this. Where you'll be driving down the road, and there's that yellow caution sign on the highways. And it's not like it's like a deer crossing sign, but it's clearly like a Mexican crossing sign.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I hate that. It's
a silhouette of a woman.
It is, but it's a child. Yeah, but that's the only way to put it, because it is Mexican immigrants who come in and run across the road because they are laminate from the man. And there are these signs warning you against immigrants, illegal.
Because people run
immigrants
over.
Dashing across the road in a headlong rush for freedom, only to end up in the grill of some guy's Kenworth getting hosed out the next day at the weigh station. So, I mean, the borders down there, just they kind of exist in name only.
And the exit from Mexico was stolen a long time ago. They never replaced it.
Seriously. The weird thing about it is, though, is that especially in California, if you're legally crossing the border in California, you're going into Tijuana, which really is like, I don't care where you live or how long it's been since you've cleaned your house, but wherever you live, whatever, and look, you could live in my neighborhood, and it's still several hundred notches up from Tijuana, which is Tijuana is one of those places where you walk across the border and immediately you want to start scraping your skin with a Brillo pad. You just want to start every time, and I've only gone to Tijuana like a handful of times, and because Tijuana is one of those things that it's one of those things that you do once the first time you go to California, the first time you're on vacation, the first time you live, and then the only time you will go, it's like Disneyland. The only time you will then go to Tijuana subsequently is when you've got friends coming to visit you who do not believe your repeated statements that it's not worth going to. It's like the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah, the whole place smells like a restroom bathroom.
And it smells like the inside of a dumpster. It's just a terrible place. And you cross the border, and you just want to wear one of those Devo suits. You just want to, like a hazmat suit. You don't want to touch anything. You certainly don't want to ingest anything, put anything in your body. And then I don't care who you are, how long you've lived in this country, you will weep tears of sweet, gratitude-filled joy when you come back through and you pass that sign saying, you are now entering the United States of America. I don't care how jaded you are about this country. You will never be happier when you leave Tijuana and come back into California.
I'll never forget the last time I was here, this streetwalker who was a beast of a woman grabbed me and kept pulling me up against the chest, like, kind of knocked the wind out of me.
With one leg?
Yeah. Would you like to have a good time? No. Bang. The ring of my, would you like to have a good time?
No. Would you like to buy Chiclet then?
No, I would. No,
Phillips screwdriver, Phillips screwdriver.
The Pokemon, $1.99. You buy a Pokemon, ceramic, very good quality.
Or the worst part is, and I always tell people this, if you're going to go to Mexico, if you're going to go through, because Mexico and Tijuana are not the same thing.
No.
It's not like going to...
if you go to Ensenada, it's very nice.
Well, it's like if you're, like San Miguel, you know, a place like that. Those places are not all that... Tijuana is sort of its own... Tijuana is like judging Lake Oswego by, by the crack house next door to my place. Right. It's just two completely different things. But if you ever go through there, don't ever go through wearing, like, a brand name. Never go through wearing anything that identifies you as a consumer of anything. If you have a Levi's tag, cover it up. If you have a rock and roll T-shirt, do not wear it. Because as soon as you wear something that has a brand name on it or that identifies you as a consumer of a certain type of product... Man, that is all you are going to get walking down the street. You are going to be targeted by every street merchant, every vendor, who are like, and if you've been through New York, I mean, they're like 15 times as obnoxious as those guys. And if you don't, if they're unclear about how to, you know, get your attention, they will just pick some physical attribute, and they will latch onto that as the way to talk to you. So the last time I went to Tijuana, it's been several years, but I had really long hairs when I still had the Stern hair going on. So I'm walking through Tijuana, and I would get this. I would be walking in the street, and I would hear that, hey, you, hey, Lion King, hey, you want my blanket? I have horchata, you know? And if it wasn't Lion King, it was, hey, you, Bon Jovi, buy carne asada, you know, just...
I did buy one myself, the one with the beautiful Mexican eagle. I still have it.
It's a terrible place. Never go
there. Arnold Schwarzenegger says his limited command of the English language was his fault.
And I'm sorry if that, you know, offended anyone, but it was a language problem.
All right.
What else is on tonight? Home Alone 2, which we told you. Pleasantville is on with Tobey Maguire and Jeff Daniels.
Fantastic film. Joan Allen, also Reese Witherspoon. Mm-hmm. One of the great... What year did that come out? 98.
That was the year I came here.
That was one of the great, not a lost film, because it's, you know, it's not like nobody's ever heard of it, but it wasn't really a blockbuster. I'm not even sure that it made money at the box office. That is one of the great films of our time, Pleasantville.
A black and white movie? I'm not good at that.
You should absolutely see Pleasantville. It's a fantastic film.
Gone in 60 Seconds stars Nicolas Cage and Angelina Jolie.
That, on the other hand, is poo, so you shouldn't be watching that. That's a thing you should avoid.
GoldenEye. From 1995 with Pierce Brosnan and Sean Bean. Another 007 movie.
We've got this. Rick, I would like to personally thank you for doing the Jackson watch today. It was truly the most foul story I've ever captured. It's truly a psychological shot in the groin for me, Rick. You see, I'm a young filmmaker in Portland. I'm in the process of a comedy, and there's a particular scene we're filming today that involves me dressed in full Michael Jackson getup, singing and dancing a moonwalk, all to a remixed song of the King of Pop, where the gloved one intensely sings these words, "What have you done with my children? Give me back my children. Thanks to you, I am seriously contemplating abandoning the whole project. F. Matt with some Vaseline."
This F. Matt is brought to you by Barfly Magazine.
I'd like to thank you for that image. Here's Tim Riley.
Speaking of filming, the real world crew was here yesterday casting.
They're not doing Real World Portland, are they?
I don't know. They're thinking about it. It's not definite, but they were casting here.
Oh, that seems like a really bad idea.
I would love to do that.
That seems...
No, you're too late.
Oh, yeah. No, you're probably too old for them, though. How old are you?
21.
22?
21.
You're not 21? Yep. You're not 21. I think you're 22.
No, birthday is next month.
All right. Well, you could probably do it then, because I think the cutoff is 23, I think.
They 24.
Is it 24?
Yeah, I believe so.
Now, I'm unclear about this. When they do the Real World, by the way, you're listening to KRTK Vancouver, Portland, KSLM, Salem, which is an intercab station. But I mean, when they do the Real World, I'm unclear about the process. It's not like a Survivor thing where they bring people from all over the country to live in the given city. Is it all people from the city? How does that work?
No, it's people from all over.
So it's like if they're doing the Real World.
They just did Philadelphia.
Chicago.
Yeah, like one of those. Like the Philadelphia one.
Mm-hmm.
There was a guy from Tennessee. To California and a Texas.
That's
then,
true, because yep. what was the one that had the, was it Julie, the Mormon girl from BYU?
Oh, yeah, that was,
Because it was like Chicago or something.
Yeah, I think
it was Chicago. It wasn't Utah, obviously. Boy, she's turned into a hoe and a half. I was watching her, she was on the Inferno the other day, Real World Road Rules Challenge, Inferno or whatever?
Yeah.
Inferno 7, and, man, I mean, she used to look all... She is every girl from Utah, too. Every girl from Utah, every girl from BYU, every girl from Provo. They all look exactly like her, which is a fantastic thing. One of the only real attributes of Salt Lake City is the number of stunning blue-eyed, blonde-haired girls who were there, all looking like they came right off a Sports Illustrated calendar. I mean, it's fantastic. But in just a few years since she's been on the Real World, she is... MTV is clearly taking a real shine to her, and they've just started slathering on the horrific outfits that they've got her wearing. So they might. So it wouldn't be Real World in Portland, probably.
Might not.
I know they haven't done Portland. They did Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
Did you watch that? Did anybody here watch the Real World Seattle?
No, I figured it'd be boring.
Well, it was the Real World Seattle, which is because Lara's a huge fan of that. I mean, and I'm not so much, but I was a fan of the Real World. I don't know for the first. Pretty much in the post-Pedro and Puck era, I quit watching. After that was, I think, the last year of the Real World that I really watched, which was really early on. I can't even remember. I don't even know what season that was. But the Pedro Zamora era was, what, like season 3? Something like that? Whatever. Anyway, but I tuned out at about that time. And then in 98, it would have been. In 98, they did the Real World Seattle. And, of course, the Real World, every season they have this gimmick where the cast members are got to be given some job. They've all got to go do something. They got to run a business or they got to run some sort of a company or they got to all be employed at the same place. Or, like, they got to work at a golf club or they got to work at, you know, whatever, like a, you know, they got to work at the, like, a restaurant or something. And so in season 8, they all had to get radio jobs. And so, see, 1998 was when I was unemployed. So I'm sitting there and I'm living in San Diego, completely unemployed and seemingly unemployable. Unable to get a job, unable to find a radio station to even talk to me. I flew out for one audition where the guy told me halfway through the audition that I wasn't going to get the job. It's like I auditioned in Milwaukee, Wisconsin at a station that shall remain nameless. But I'm auditioning in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. The guy wants me there for 2 days. He flies me all the way out. And of course, you know, in radio, you spend a long period of time where you have no job. And when you're unemployed in radio, it feels like you're never going to get a job ever again. It's not like a lot of other industries, or maybe when you don't have a chosen career yet.
Your car blows up, people rob you, you get stabbed, you get thrown into alleys.
When you are between radio gigs, you pretty much, every time you get fired, you just write it off. You're like, well, that's the end of that career. That was fun. Now for an exciting pursuit of the culinary arts. And that's it. So I get this job audition in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And they fly me out, and the guy shows me the whole operation, and I'm all jacked because it's a... You know, because first of all, it's a job that I'm applying, and they're interested enough to pay the whatever $100 to fly me there. They put me up in a hotel, and I'm thinking, that's it, baby. I'm in like Flynn. The job is mine to lose. Bada bing. Hoo-ah. And I go into the thing, and it's like a Thursday and a Friday. And the poor sap, of course, that I would theoretically be replacing is on vacation. And so while this is radio. The guy was on vacation. He was out of the country. He was in speaking of Mexico. I think he was in Puerto Vallarta. So he's on vacation in Mexico for 2 weeks. While he's on vacation, they fill his show with a succession of people auditioning for the job. He doesn't know about this. Everybody who's listening, everybody at the station is aware that they're just bringing in a series of would-be replacements. The poor guy is in Puerto Vallarta, probably emptying out his bank account on cheap prostitutes and vodka. Meanwhile, I'm back there auditioning for his gig. Anyway, so I do the show on Thursday. It's the first day of a two-part audition. Halfway through the show on Thursday, I'm in a commercial break, and I'm thinking, yeah, this is going great. I'm all over this. The door to the studio opens. The program director leans in his head and goes, yeah, you can come back and do the second day tomorrow if you want, but I don't really see the point. So, all right, thanks. Shuts the door.
So that guy on vacation has you to thank, actually.
Seriously, because I just ate crap. I was terrible, apparently. The guy just told me halfway, and I'm like, I'm still on the air. It's only halfway through the show. And the guy comes in and tells me that he's like, ah, you're terrible. We're not going to hire you. Please get out, and we'll be stopping payment on the hotel this afternoon. So I'm living in Southern California. I'm unemployed. Don't feel like I'm ever going to get another radio job again. I'm sitting in front of the television. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to lose myself in some pleasant escapism. I'm going to turn on music television and see what sort of exciting entertainment offerings there are for me today. I turn on the Real World Seattle, and they've all been given jobs. At the End, which is the End our sister station?
Yes, I believe so.
It is, so KNDD, yeah. Or whatever it is, 100.7 in Seattle? No, that's the buzz. It's 107.7.
Yeah.
It's the alternative station. It's like their equivalent to 94.7 FM. So radio, which is, you know, one of the most unbelievably competitive fields anywhere, where everybody's trying to gouge everybody else's eyes out for a radio gig. And, like, these eight jagoffs in a house have all been given this fantastic place to live on a pier, on the water, and they've all been given jobs at a radio station in a top 10 market. And then, of course, they're always so busy getting high and passing out in a bathroom somewhere with some nude co-ed that half of them never bother to show up for the radio gig. They've all been given, like, their own late night show. During the week, just sitting there seething with anger, sitting in my house in San Diego, like looking at my car repossession payments, like stacking up, watching these idiots on MTV being given a bunch of radio jobs. Boy, that was, if there was ever a low point, that was it. If there was ever a moment where I just considered selling everything and buying a series of handguns and going and doing me some killing, that was the moment. John, you're a full-time listener. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. What's up?
How's it going, man?
What do you got, brother?
Grew up in Northeast Portland, and one of my boys, he was on Real World London. He's from Northeast Portland.
Really?
Yeah. And that was, you know, probably what, the fifth season or sixth season? It was a while back.
Something like that. The Real World is one of those things that is now, it's been on for so long. People, yeah. The Real World that never really got the credit it deserves for, I think, inventing the reality genre.
First reality show, man.
Yeah, I mean, somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, then, you know, there was like Candid Camera and Queen for a Day and all that stuff way back in, would have been the 50s and the 60s, but I think the reality show as we know it today comes from the Real World. That is
right.
The absolute genesis.
Well, two things, man. He said it wasn't too real. There'd be a fight or something, and then all of a sudden he said these producers would come over and say, hey, man, we didn't get all that fight. Is there any way we can do that again?
Yeah. And the producers are notorious for spiking the set, for leaving things around the set that they know are going to cause arguments.
Like a loaded gun.
Yeah, loaded gun and a big bottle of whiskey. Or they would take like a book on like how to get women into bed, you know, and they would leave it open on some guy's dresser knowing that one of the female cast members would find it,
right.
You know, or they would take a pair of panties and they would toss them into somebody's bedroom and just leave them there knowing it was going to spark some sort of an argument, which is, of course, at least in the first like five or six seasons of The Real World, was all an effort to spark some instance where somebody would punch somebody else in the face and then that guy would be kicked off the show. Which is how all of those early seasons of The Real World, it could still be going on for all I know. There was like three seasons in a row where it climaxed with some big black man hitting a white woman and then being voted off the show by everybody else, which is like some weird like race baiting obsession that MTV had for years on that program about having some angry black person voted off by the remaining white people on the program, which is a thing that all reality television had for years. It was on Survivor and on all of that, it was always like the lone minority was the person voted off by all the crackers on the show.
Hey man, just one more thing. I think he is the only one in the history of the real world that never hooked up with a chick in a hot tub. So
he gave no
love to the NEP.
All right, excellent. There you go. That's John. There you go. All right. 503-535-9100. By the way, 1-877-535. 9100, here's Tim Riley.
Meanwhile, James Caviezel of The Passion of the Christ
plays Jim McCormick in the independent flick Madison. This movie is loosely based on a man's victory in the 1971 Madison, Indiana Hydroplane Regatta. All the more reason for the movie. James said he didn't want to be seen in this film about boat racing.
I never saw this as a boat racing film.
It's about Jesus.
I saw it as a... about a guy wanting to fulfill a dream like many of us have, and a lot of risk, you know, you know, triumphs of the human heart.
Now, this isn't about Madison, Wisconsin. It's about Madison, Indiana. You don't want to mislead people.
First of all, with the amount of money that James Caviezel's undoubtedly being paid for everything following the Passion of the Christ film, you think that, I mean, and that goes for a lot of these actors, too. We had that Natasha Lyonne clip from a few weeks ago. Mm. You think they could at least pretend to be excited? Like, they could at least feign some enthusiasm for this movie that they're coming out to pimp.
Wait till you hear this next question. James.
What drew you to the project?
No, please tell us about the dangers of driving a boat.
I remember one time we hit a wake and the whole boat goes in there. And I thought, well, this is it, you know. And the other time is that it's a duckbill, those old boats. And then they went to a twin sponson. And the duckbills, when you hit a wake, and if a wake just comes by, you can take the boat and just pull it under and you flip over, and that was it.
Little boat talk.
It's clearly the most dangerous thing I've ever done on a, you know, in any motorsports or anything like that.
Join us for the Outback Angler Saturday mornings at conveniently at 6 a.m.
This can go between the computer show and the wine program or something. Now, oddly enough, there aren't a lot of things that I know in this world. There are very few things that I am well versed in. As Douglas Copeland always says, everybody has their own personal seven Dream Jeopardy categories. Mine's basically just Duckman and Led Zeppelin and Britcoms. But you know what? One of the things that I know an unbelievable amount about is hydroplane racing. Because
is this the same thing?
This is what he's talking. He's talking about hydroplane racing because Kennewick, Washington, the Columbia River, near the Columbia Bridge, is where they do the Columbia Cup every year, which is one of the biggest. It's one of the most well-respected hydroplane courses in the country, in the world, actually.
Isn't that by, what is that, Fishhook Campground or something like that they have there?
I
remember camping there once, and the boat races were going on. Somewhere.
Well, the hydroplane races go right down by what they call the Blue Bridge, the Columbia Bridge, which links Kennewick and Pasco. And no one cares, but the hydroplanes are just these unbelievably fast. I mean, to call them speedboats is really to undersell. I mean, you've seen hydroplane racing, probably.
Yeah,
I mean,
they're fast.
They are unbelievably fast, and I got to tell you, maybe it's a thing that's grandfathered into me. It's probably a thing that I wouldn't be all that interested in now if I first saw it as an adult. But growing up in Kennewick, that is like the equivalent of the Rose Parade and the Civil War game and the Apple Cup and the Super Bowl and all of that stuff wrapped up into one in Kennewick. When you grow up in Kennewick, Washington, the entire year is either leading up to or recovering from the boat races. And the race itself is only one day, but they call it the Water Follies. It's a four-day event, I think. It's like a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, where they close off the park. You have to pay to get in. They open up a huge series of beer gardens. Thousands of people come in. It is not out of the question for the population of Kennewick to double sometimes, depending on how many people come into town to watch this boat race. And then on Sunday, they do a series of, you know, laps and eliminations, and then they do this final hydroplane race, which are these unbelievably fast boats that do this huge sort of oval course, where they race down past the bridge and they go around and whatever. Anyway, so if you've ever seen those, one of the things that everybody is into that nobody will admit is that those hydroplane crashes are spectacular when they happen. And I've had either the fortune or the misfortune, depending on how one looks at it, to witness a few hydroplane crashes in my time. I saw Chip Hanauer, who, and anybody who's grown up in the Northwest, especially anybody who grew up, north of here, they know the name Chip Hanauer, who was a guy who drove the Miss Atlas van lines for a long time, and then he drove the Miss Budweiser. And man, to see a boat that's going hundreds of miles an hour just catch a whole bunch of air and, you know, go like what seems like about 20 feet in the air and then just crack apart, that's a pretty amazing thing to see. So because I'm a big dork and I grew up watching that, and because it is like the single biggest thing in my hometown, this is a movie that I will be suckered into seeing because I am a nitwit. Josh in Portland, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. What's up?
Hey, Rick. quick, fellow intercom slave here. I just wanted to let you know that I heard your rant about getting a radio gig.
Yeah.
I'm actually on my way to an interview right now, and I wanted to call and thank you for crushing every hope and dream I ever had of getting this gig.
Wait, I don't understand. You're a fellow intercom employee, yet you're on your way to a radio interview?
Right. I work in the Seattle market.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I don't work in your building. I don't work on Bancroft. No, I'm in Seattle, and I'm down here listening to you. Love the show, F. Matt.
Thank you.
And wanted to thank you for crushing every hope and dream I had getting this job down here.
I'm unclear about this. So you work for Entercom in Seattle, yet you are here applying for a job.
And they're aware. I'm playing by the rules.
No, are you applying for a job with Entercom Portland?
No, I'm looking for a job outside of the big market.
Oh, I see.
Where else would that be?
Yeah, I can't even imagine where that might be.
I'm not saying, but I love the show, and thank you.
I'm sure
I'm not going to get it anyway, and I owe that all to you.
Well, I'm just trying, as my friend working in radio, you are well aware of the realities of this business, which is...
I am indeed.
You know what radio is? Radio is a small series of isolated moments of near orgasmic happiness, and then followed by long periods of soul-crushing depression and abandonment.
Not to mention Top Ramen and hot dogs.
There you go, my friend. We're speaking the same language. Well, good luck to you, my friend.
Thank you, Rick. Love the show.
All right, there you go. That's Josh in Portland. There's a little F. Matt.
This F. Matt is brought to you by Barfly Magazine.
So where's this job opening? I'm surprised that there are job openings.
I don't know. In Portland, is somebody... Somebody else get arrested that
we
know
of? Who's on vacation this week?
Yes. Who's playing a best of? Well, Lars is here. I don't even know.
I don't know.
Especially because everything here is... I wonder if it's on... I should have asked if it was on air. It's probably wrong of us to speculate on openly on the air about what job he's applying for. Because he didn't say it was on air. It might be like it could be promotions, could be sales. Mm-hmm. Probably not, though. Because there's always a sales job. They're always firing people left and right. They're probably firing three or four people here today. That's just the way it goes. It's like wheat before the sickle every week here.
And then you find out they've been here for 10 years. Like, sir, who are they?
We got one on Monday. Did you see that one on Monday?
Yeah, I was wondering who that was.
Wish a fond farewell to, Karen Higgledybach, and you're like, well, she's been here since 1982. Thanks and congratulations. And you're just like, who? I have no idea who we're talking about.
Well, there's an office area where they put people they don't like and never see.
Well, there's that whole... There's that one whole wing here by the parking lot where I think they put everybody who they're trying to forget about. It's like a gulag down there.
Yeah.
Like that's the place where you get sent to if you're like low on commission or something. If they're like low on the totem pole. The thing is, everybody in Portland. This is a thing that's not a secret. This is a thing that we talk about all the time. How we're the only thing live and local here between 9 and noon. Everything here is either syndicated or pre-taped. I mean, because there's almost nothing local.
No.
Well, maybe it's a music gig. It might not have been. I guess we're thinking too small. I guess we're thinking AM.
DJ?
Yeah, well, we're thinking too. I guess because we're AM talk people, I guess we're thinking it's an AM gig.
No.
Is there some zany DJ job open somewhere? Is there?
I think there always is.
Is there a liner card somewhere waiting to be read? is there time and temperature somewhere waiting to be dictated in a bored lackluster fashion between Shania Twain songs? We should probably move off of this topic. Let's get one more a full-time listener. Leland, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. What's up?
Rick, what's going on?
What do you got, brother?
Hey, I just wanted to make a comment, and you kill me with this. First of all, I want to say this. You make all of us dorks proud, man. You know, you represent us real well.
Thank you.
Now, when you made that comment about the reality shows having the one lone black guy and wanting to get rid of him, dude, I thought I was like the only cat in America that thought that way.
No, like, especially in the real world, like 3 years in a row, and it was always the same way. They would stage some fight between a black guy and a woman, and then the rest of the house would, and it was always, how do I put this? It was always a woman who, at the very least, was an equal participant in the fight. Let me put it that way. I don't want to get into some sort of she was asking, but it's always a woman who was an equal participant in the argument, and man, then they would have to, well, we have to have a house meeting.
You talk about the episode with David. What? Too old when he snatched the cover off the girl.
Yeah, yeah.
She was asking for it.
David the comedian. And there was the whole thing where he's like dragging her off the bed or something. And then they had it was like some bad episode of Leave It to Beaver where they had to have a family council. We have to have a family council. David, you're out. Same thing in Seattle when they were doing this Seattle one.
Hey, Rick.
Yeah.
Man, you can't get on TV, man, at all. You need to be on TV, man. No, I'm serious.
No,
yeah, you're next.
It's the nose. It's this huge nose. They would have to get an extra wide angle lens just to get both my nostrils, my friend.
I love you, Cat. I love you.
All right. Are you spreading the word, Leland?
I'm spreading the word, man. I listen to you every day. Long time listener, man.
Well, we appreciate it. You
stay cool.
Call us anytime.
All right, baby.
All right, there you go. All right, are we behind? We are
way behind.
We're like 90 minutes over.
You can't go without the Monkey Watch.
Well, do we want to go a segment long here? Do we want to break and come back into the Monkey Watch?
No, I'm not sure.
You want to?
Kyle, sure. How do you feel about that?
I feel fine about that. We can break right here.
All right, I'll tell you what. We'll break. We didn't even finish the E-Catch, but I don't care. I don't care what goddamn Jim Caviezel says about anything.
How about Ashton Kutcher?
Is it actually Ashton? Is it Ashton Kutcher, or is it somebody talking about him
and
his acting skills?
Catherine Hahn.
Who knows who that is?
And then
anyone?
Ali Larter.
I don't understand what's going on.
I don't pick them. I just read them. I'm just the messenger. I read whatever's put in front of me.
Okay. I'm so confused.
It's my job.
Let's break. We'll come back. We'll try to get everything under control here. Maybe we'll talk about Ashton Kutcher here. We've got Jolie coming up. We've got to finish this Monkey Watch. We've got to do it on the other side. We got, what else? Top five songs I would like to make R.E.M.'s Michael Stipe sing at gunpoint. Another installment, speaking of being king of the dorks. We have another installment of the Xbox Files featuring a Booby Doctor update. That's all coming up right here on the Rick Emerson Show. Stay there.